Southern FM. The sounds of the Bayside.
Where we are listening to the Space Show. Now, I'm welcoming to the Space Show two members of the Space Association of Australia. There's Peter Aylward.
Good evening, Andrew, and good evening, world.
And there's Michael Abdullah.
Thank you, Andrew. How are you going?
Now, what brings you two guys in today?
Well, we've heard bad reports about your show, and we want to come in and fix it. No.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah, that's welcome. That's welcome.
No. We were very privileged to have been offered an opportunity to review a wonderful new book, which came out just very recently to mark the 50th anniversary this year of the Apollo mission, Apollo 8. And the book is called Rocket Men. And we'd like to tell you and the listeners about it, and we're actually going to give people an opportunity. Well, we'll be drawing the winners of our competition, which we've been running over the last couple of weeks, so stand by your radios.
Okay, well, let's get us into the mood by playing a piece of music here by Public Broadcasting Service. It's called The Other Side. Now, Peter, why would it be called The Other Side?
Well, this mission was the first to go put humans around the moon. So they'd be actually going around the other side of the moon, not the dark side of the moon, the other side of the moon, completely away from Earth. So the first human beings to do that, the first human beings to sight the other side of the moon. So pretty significant achievement.
All right. So this piece of music comes from the United Kingdom. It's by Public Service Broadcasting. From 2015, there is music written by Jay Wilgoose.
Apollo Control, Houston, 2 minutes, 50 seconds away from time of LOS now. Our distance away from the moon, 460 nautical miles. Velocity, 7417 feet per second. Here in Mission Control, we're standing by. There's certainly a great deal of anxiety at this moment. We acquire at 36 minutes. So at 68 hours, 55 minutes, continue to monitor. This is Apollo Control.
Go all the way. Roger. Thanks a lot, Drew. See you on the other side.
we've had a loss of a signal with Apollo 8 at 68 hours, 58 minutes, 45 seconds. We will watch with continuing interest the AOS clock here in Mission Control. They're traveling over the backside of the moon now. Our velocity reading here, 7777 feet per second. Now we're in our period of longest wait. Continuing to monitor, this is Apollo Control, Houston. Houston, we've acquired signal, but no voice contact yet. We're standing by. We're looking at engine data, and it looks good. Tank pressures look good.
Apollo 8, this is Houston.
We've got it. Apollo 8 now in lunar orbit. There's a cheer in this room. This is Apollo Control, Houston. Switching now to the voice of Jim Lovell.
560.5, and hear your voice.
Yes, nearly 50 years ago, Christmas of 1968. And I remember that moment very well, going outside with the radio turned up loud, because you didn't have portable radios in those days, at least couldn't afford one, and the radio turned up loud to the Voice of America, and standing out there and thinking, God, there's men up there, and they're about to come back around and be back in sight, and the signal, we waited and waited, and there it was. Well, there's now a book about it, and then people can relive the excitement through the book. What's the book called, and what? Tell us about it, please.
Yeah, so the book is called Rocket Men, and it is subtitled The Daring Odyssey of Apollo 8 and the Astronauts Who Made Man's First Journey to the Moon. It's by an author named Robert Curzon, and it's released in Australia via Scribe Publications. The book, the overall impression of the book is very good. It's I think one of the first views that Michael and I had of the book is that it's a very easy read, and it's really nicely presented with enough detail to have to give you interest. The people that are interested in the program and space, to give detail that you can get your teeth into, but not to the extent of geeky minutiae of nonsense that, you know, would just drive you crazy. So it moves along quite nicely. The actual story of Apollo 8 is quite unique, and not only because of what they did, but the setting out of which it came. It was 1968. Back in those days, for people that are not aware of it, there was a Cold War between basically the West and the Soviet Union, as it was then. And information about their programs and what they were doing was very scarce. And up until around this time, the Soviet Union had really had the lead over the US in their achievements of rocketry and activities in space, etc. And in 1968, you know, the Apollo program was getting towards the pointy end of getting to out into deep space, but there were still a number of problems, including the lunar module wasn't ready. So they had a sort of a sequence of missions to incrementally expand their capabilities. But then the CIA or the Secret Service basically had some pretty solid intelligence that the Soviet Union were actually planning to send cosmonauts out to the moon fairly quickly. So basically, some of the heads of NASA said, well, what could we do to expedite this this program and beat them, essentially? And the timelines, I mean, the actual mission took place in December of 1968. And as of August of 1968, they hadn't made a decision about doing Apollo 8. The Apollo 8 was originally going to be just an Earth orbital mission. They came up with this idea of leaving the lunar module behind because it wasn't ready, changing the configuration of the mission and going out around the moon to prove a lot of the things that they were working on. And so they said, well, what's the risk? What's the benefit? What's the possibility? And they had a all-hands meeting. And then they had this meeting on the August the 9th, and August the 17th, they approved this idea, and they took it to the head of NASA, and who then took it to the president, and they said, "Yep, let's do it." And you know, that is really unheard of in a multi-billion-dollar, very complex program like space, and you know, it's unheard of.
Because in August of that year, Apollo had not flown in a manned... They hadn't done Apollo 7, their first manned flight. And they'd only flown two Saturn V before.
Correct.
And this time they're going to send it, people on it and all the way to the moon.
And the first one was... The first Saturn V flight was fairly successful. The second one had a lot of problems, pogo problems, where basically it was a lot of vibration. And so... They felt confident that they had that problem sorted, but they hadn't actually flown a test mission to prove it, and they were going to put people on it. So that and a whole bunch of other things. As you say, there was only one manned Apollo mission that still had yet to fly. The last Apollo mission, as people may or may not recall, was they didn't even get off the ground. They killed three people in Apollo 1. So that was back in January of 1967. So there was a big gap, and they had a lot to catch up. And
significantly, one of the decisions that they made in order to approve Apollo 8 was that was on the condition that Apollo 7 was successful. So,
which turned out to be very successful. And the decision was basically taken, and. And they put the plan together very quickly because, you know, keep in mind, this is 1968. You know, the computing power there back then was very limited compared to what we have today. And computing trajectories and going out to deep space, you know, think of all the factors that hadn't been proven. Deep space navigation, communications, deep space, you know, being able to... because what they wanted to do is, as a safety margin, rather than send... The spacecraft out to the moon and go straight into orbit. Basically, the way the Apollo spacecraft is configured, there's one engine on that rocket, on that vehicle. If it doesn't work, they're in big trouble. Now, what they did as a risk mitigation thing is they designed the trajectory, once again, which is a pretty unique piece of design, that they would send the rocket out on what they call a free return trajectory. If nothing happened, it would get caught by the moon's gravity, go into a very low skim around the moon, and that momentum would fire it back to the Earth, and they would not have to touch anything, and they would basically, well, get close to the Earth. Now, how they entered into the atmosphere would probably be a bit of... they might be able to tweak the thrusters and get an alignment that made it so that they could safely enter the Earth's atmosphere. So... That was a risk mitigation factor and quite a smart piece of engineering. Of course, then, as the song that we were listening to alluded to, they had to fire an engine to get themselves into orbit around the moon. Now, if that engine didn't fire, they would come back to the Earth. If it did fire, a couple of things could happen. They could fire the correct amount of time and they would go into orbit. It could fire too much and crash into the moon, or it could fire too little, shoot off out of lunar orbit and go out into deep space. There's a lot of things that had to go right, and it's a one type of one point fail area. You know, if that engine doesn't fire, they've got a backup engine. So risky move, but it paid off very well. So coming back to the book goes into that enough detail, painting the picture. And, Mike, you want to talk about what was happening in 1968 as a background to Apollo 8 in America, the political situations, etc.?
You have to remember that this was the time of the American involvement in the Vietnam War. There were civil rights problems and issues across the country. There were rioting in the streets. At that time, there were some 16,000 American deaths in Vietnam. That same year, there were the two very high-profile assassinations of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy. So the fabric of sort of American society was quite fractured at that time. And
a bit like 2018.
A little bit like some aspects of 2018, I suppose. But, yeah, so it was a fraught time and a year of lots of bad news and lots of social turmoil. So that's the background to this momentous event in human history.
I did hear someone commenting on radio at the time that they said, "Thank you, NASA, you saved 1968.
That's correct. That's right. Yep. Yeah. Yes.
And the book does a really nice job of painting that picture and in the reader's mind. You know, because you know maybe a lot of the people that might read this book may not be aware of any of those details. So, you know, geeks like us are pretty conversant with what was happening around that time, but it's for the novice and the person that's not familiar with the history, it does really paint that picture well. So it gives a lot of background to the drama and the courageous decision-making that went into Apollo 8 for the designers, for the managers, for the astronauts, for the families of the astronauts. They talk quite a bit about the families and their own particular challenges and how they were dealing with the decisions and the mission itself and the key points in the mission where the, you know, as I've mentioned, a single point failure, everyone's dead. Or they go into the lunar orbit forever and you know, Dad's up there orbiting for the next 1,000 years and, you know, pretty horrible some things to be thinking about. So we really felt the book, you know, did a great job of that. Yep. And but we urge people to go out and
Have a read. Yeah. And as Pete mentioned, it's written very well so that even though some of these facts are known to what were known to us, it's not written in a laborious way or anything of that nature, and it's very nicely written for whether you're sort of coming to this for the first time and you want to know some of the details, or if you're fairly familiar with the story as we were. But even for us, it was a great read.
Well, even for us, you know, we're quite knowledgeable. There's things I found out new that I didn't know. And apparently, Jim Lovell made a navigation mistake on the return to Earth, where he lost his navigation of where the spacecraft was. So they had to go through this process of using their sextant and all those other things, which actually, interestingly, because Jim Lovell, you might recall the name, he was actually on this other mission called Apollo 13, which made a great movie, as also a space mission. But he used some of that experience, and NASA used some of that experience to help them in Apollo 13, so quite interesting. And also they talk about Frank Borman, who actually just before the mission announced he was going to retire after the mission. But the sequence and how it was working, a lot of people thought that he was actually going to be on the Apollo 11 mission. So he might have been the first person to walk on the moon, but he felt the Apollo 8 mission had achieved the objective of beating the Ruskies, and he was happy with that. So, yeah, fascinating. So once again, for the novice that doesn't know much about this, they get things out of it. For the geeks like us, we got things out of it as well. So strongly urge you go out there and find this book.
Okay, could you tell us again the name of the book?
The book is called Rocket Men by Robert Curzon, and in Australia it's available through Scribe Publications. I'm not sure what the price of it here is, but I suspect it would also be available on you know, Kindles. Yep. And those types of things.
And if you're looking for it on the bookshelf, it's got a black cover, and it's got three white spacesuited astronauts standing on a ladder on the front cover.
That's it.
Well, thank you for bringing that book to our attention, Peter and Michael.
Well, thank you to Scribe Publications. They've been very generous in supporting us and helping us with this and giving us the opportunity to read the book, which has been great.
And on the Space Show, we gave away a book, a copy of that book, to one of our listeners. But now members of the Space Association are in the draw to get a book as well. So are you going to pick something out of the hat, as it were?
That's correct. What we've done is we've got we've made three books available on a lottery basis to members, current paid members of the association. And so we're going to do that right now. I'm going to bend in. So we will pick out three names we'll get Jay to do that for us.
We've got
a very expensive bowl, crystal bowl here.
One name's out of the hat and it's out of the bowl.
It's John Hoffman.
John Hoffman. And we have a second name.
Adina Silverstein.
Ah, she's been on our space show.
She has. And the third is Bradley Outshoon.
Fantastic. Congratulations to those winners. Well, look, we'll be in touch with you. We do have your address, so we'll be popping those into the mail for you. Now, we also did another draw, this one via social media, and we asked a question about, and I can't remember what the question was, but we'll pull it up later on. So people responded to that that question, and we'll do that draw right now. Gentlemen, if you want to choose one name for us. I'll find the question in a second. Just give me a second here.
So there's just one of these, Peter?
Correct.
And who's going to be the lucky winner?
And the winner is Jonathan Clark.
Hey, congratulations, Jonathan. Jonathan's the president of the Mars Society, so there you go.
That's correct.
Yeah, the question we asked was, following the trans-Earth injection, why was there an almost four-minute delay between the tracking station at Honeysuckle Creek receiving the telemetry from Apollo 8 and Mission Control establishing voice communication with the crew? The options were that there was no telemetry delay at all. The astronauts were busy photographing Earthrise, which later became the most what was described as the most influential picture ever taken. Voice communications were always delayed because the astronauts might swear, or they might have seen aliens, or the studio in Roswell pushed the play button on the telemetry generator a little bit too early, or the correct answer, Bill Anders actually forgot to activate the high-gain antenna. So, there we go.
But if you read the book, then you'd find out.
Exactly. We got that answer from the book. So we've got to back up on that.
Right, well, that's the prize draw, and